This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Well, the night sky for December 2009. And of course, we have a long night at the present time, which is great. So there are two parts of the sky, two of the very best bits, in fact, that one can see. Soon after sunset, over in the west, you can actually see Cygnus the Swan, Lyra the Lyre, and below them, Aquila the Eagle. It's a lovely region in the sky to look at. The swan is basically diving down into the sea, if you happen to looking over towards the Irish Sea, for example. And then further around to the south is the square of Pegasus. Up to the left of that is Andromeda. And within that, as we'll see later, the Andromeda Galaxy. Below that, a little circuit of Pisces. Below that again, the little planet Uranus is at the present time. Aquarius, in fact, also lies below Pegasus, but there are no very bright stars there to see. But higher up in the sky, you've got the W shape of Cassiopeia. And down to the left of that, Perseus. If you look with binoculars, between Cassiopeia and Perseus, you should see a little fuzzy glow. It's the double cluster, a rather beautiful pairing of clusters in the Milky Way, which runs through that part of the sky. Well, as the night progresses, then over towards the south, east and east, we first of all have Taurus the Bull with that little group of stars, the Pleiades cluster. Below that, the larger Hyades cluster with the bright star Aldebaran apparently within it. And then again rising perhaps about 10 o'clock at night, you've got the wonderful constellation of Orion the Hunter, the three stars of his belt. Down to the left, pointing towards the brightest star in the northern sky, Sirius. And below the central star of the belt, we have the so-called Sword of Orion. Again, binoculars will show a rather milky region in that sword, and that's M42, the great nebula in Orion, and that is a region where stars are forming. It's basically a stellar nursery. Up to the left of Orion, we have the constellation of Gemini. I'm going to come back to Gemini a little bit later on. Binoculars will show quite a nice cluster on the foot of the uppermost of the two twins. And above them still is the constellation of Auriga, with the bright yellowish star Capella, highest in the sky. That again is in the Milky Way, and with binoculars you may pick up a hint under dark skies of three very nice clusters. They're M36, M37 and M38. So it's a very rich region of the sky to look at, and very rewarding if you can get under nice, dark and transparent skies. Okay, so what about the planets? Well, not a bad month for planets, actually. Jupiter is still visible in the southwest after sunset, at magnitude about minus 2.2, dropping slightly to minus 2.1. It's still 37 or so arc seconds across, so a small telescope will easily show you the equatorial bands and some of the detail on the surface. It's actually moving towards Neptune, and I'll mention Neptune a little bit later on. On the 21st, a waxing crescent moon will pass just 3 degrees above them both, as I'll show you in the highlights of the month. And again, a problem with observing Jupiter with a telescope when it's low in the sky is that the different colours refract as they come through the atmosphere. So you actually get sort of overlapping images in the different colours. A very good thing to do is to observe with a green filter. First of all, that limits the refractive effect somewhat, but also, in fact, a green filter brings out the equatorial bands. It makes them stand out more clearly, so well worth doing. You'll obviously see as well a number, up to 4, of the Galilean moons. It's very rare you wouldn't see any, but sometimes 1 or 2 will be either behind or in front of Jupiter as they weave their way around it. Well, Saturn can now be seen in the pre-dawn sky. It actually rises at about 1:30 in the morning at the 1st of December and about 11:30 at night at the end. So you can actually wait up and see it. The angular size of the disk is about 18 arc seconds. So again, there's a little bit of faint detail you can see. It's not so obvious as the detail on Jupiter. The rings are still very close to edge on. In fact, the angle increases slightly from 4.3 to 4.9 degrees during December, so they're getting a little bit more open. And of course, this is one reason why Saturn is not as bright as it normally is. We're not getting much of a reflection from the rings. A small telescope should easily show you Titan. That's at magnitude 8, 7.8 in fact, and even binoculars might well pick it up, and a small telescope will spot it quite easily. What about Mercury? Well, that's been hiding behind the Sun, but it actually reappears in the evening sky in the latter part of December, and you can actually spot it low above a clear southwestern horizon. It reaches what's called greatest elongation on December the 20th, and at magnitude minus 0.5, a telescope would show it having a gibbous phase. But the angular diameter is only 6.7 arc seconds, so you're not really going to see any detail. If you actually observe around the end of December, about the 20th, about get there perhaps to a good observing site with a low western horizon before the sun sets. First of all, as the sun actually sets, if it's a very clear horizon, you might just see what's called the green flash, the final moment of disappearance. A little line on the horizon where the sun was becomes a vivid iridescent green. I've seen it twice. It's a lovely thing to spot, often seen actually over the sea, but you can see it over land as I once did. If you get there in time, you'll know where the sun has set, so you'll know to look a little bit up to the left in order to spot Mercury a little while later. Binoculars will almost certainly help you. Well, Mars is becoming more prominent as it comes towards opposition, which is at the end of January. That's when we're closest to it. It's actually rising at about 8:30 at the beginning of the month and is well up in the southeast by midnight. And I looked at it the other night. You just see a little salmony pink sort of disc. It doesn't really look red. It's more of a salmon pink colour. It actually crosses from Cancer, where it is at the very beginning of the month, into Leo on the 1st of December, so it moves into Leo. It continues eastwards in the sky until December the 20th, when it turns round and comes back towards Cancer, reaching Cancer again on January the 9th. That's the so-called retrograde motion, which so worried the ancient observers. Why did it appear to move backwards in the sky? Well, the answer is, of course, very simple. The Earth is sort of going round on the inside track, overtaking Mars on the inside. So relative to us, Mars appears to be going backwards in the sky. So that's going to be good and will be a highlight of next month's night sky, obviously. Sadly, in fact, this apparition of Mars isn't going to be one of the best ones, because when we are at opposition, Mars is actually towards the outer part of its elliptical orbit. So the distance between the Earth and Mars is certainly a lot bigger than it often is, and the maximum angular slice is going to only be about 14 arc seconds, whereas a few years ago, at the closest approach for about 60,000 years, it was over 25 arc seconds, and that makes a big difference to what you can see. Well, finally, Venus. Well, really, this isn't a good month for Venus. It's basically going to be behind the Sun. It gets to superior conjunction, which means it's behind the Sun precisely, and that's on January the 11th. I did spot it low in the morning sky under a very clear sky, so there wasn't much glare from the Sun, just before sunrise a couple of days ago. I'm doing this on the last day of November. But I doubt whether one would be able to see it for more than a few days into December. We're going really to have to wait until February to have another look. So, there are the planets. What about some highlights of December? Well, the 14th and the days up to that is a great time to actually look out for the Geminid meteor shower, which is one of the best of the year. Now, last year, it wasn't very good because there was a full moon, actually in Gemini, very close to the radiant. That's where the meteors appear to come from. But this year, it's only a couple of days before new moon, so the moon is not going to be a problem, and we have the really good chance, if you're willing to stay up around midnight, preferably a bit beyond, when Gemini is well up into the east, you should see maybe 60 or more meteors per hour. They come, in fact, from a comet, or an asteroid rather, 3200 Phaeton it's called, and that's rather interesting because most of the meteor showers actually come from comets. And the radiant, in fact, is very close to the bright star Castor. Castor and Pollux are the heavenly twins, the two brightest stars in the constellation of Gemini. And be warned, if it's clear, it will be cold. Keep yourself warm. A woolly hat doesn't half help. Perhaps have a hot drink with you. And go out to a nice dark site and just perhaps on a opened out deck chair, lie back and look upwards to the sky. And they can be a very lovely thing to look at. Well, that's on the 14th. At the very end of December, on the 31st, we just about have a partial eclipse of the moon. That is, a little bit of the moon will just go into the Earth's umbra and therefore go into complete shadow. So it's not really going to be that impressive. But in the evening, starting at about 17:17, so soon after dark, the moon begins to enter what's called the penumbral shadow, and so its brightness will gradually drop. Finally, at 18:52, a small part of the moon enters the umbral shadow, and it stays in for about an hour, and the mid-eclipse, as it's called, is at 7:52 p.m. You might just see the bottom right-hand corner of the moon going a slightly ruddy colour. Incidentally, that is the second moon, or full moon, of December, and it's therefore called a blue moon. The second moon, full moon in a month, is a blue moon, and that's sort of the phrase, you know, once in a blue moon. It doesn't happen very often. That's the current meaning, the second full moon in a calendar month. But in fact, there was a much more complicated ecclesiastical definition some many years ago, but that seems to have changed. So the second full moon this month. Now, when the moon is new, the skies are darker, that's actually a good time to find the little planet Uranus, particularly with binoculars or maybe a small telescope. As I mentioned earlier, it's below the circlet of Pisces, which is itself below the square of Pegasus, and I put a chart showing you how to find it. It's actually 5 degrees below, and a little to the left, of the star Kappa Piscoris, which is the lower right-hand star of the head of Pisces. And you might just find it with your unaided eye, but binoculars will certainly help. So again, a little chart to find that on the night sky page. And for a couple of months, I've been telling you how to find the Andromeda Galaxy. You basically start at the top left-hand corner of the square of Pegasus, arc round two bright stars, turn sharp right, one bright star, and then you come to it the same distance. Again, there's a chart showing you that. But I've added something this month because under very dark skies, just a few days ago, I was able also to find M33, which is the face-on spiral galaxy in Triangulum. Essentially, you come back from Andromeda to the star where you turn sharp right, and you go the same distance again and a touch to the left. And if you do that under dark skies with binoculars, you might just see this rather little faint smudge of light, which is really all you see unless you have a really big telescope. But that's M33, the third largest galaxy in our local group of galaxies. M31, Andromeda, is the largest. We reckon we're the second. M33 is the third. Finally, on December the 21st, you can see the crescent moon just 3 degrees up and to the right of Jupiter. Now, in fact, in between them, just 0.6 degrees above and to the right of Jupiter, is in fact the planet Neptune. But at magnitude 8, with the light from the moon nearby, I'm not totally sure you'll pick it out with binoculars, but it might be worth a try. Neptune is beside a line of three stars. 42 Capricornus is one of them. That's at 5.1 magnitude. And there's 44 and 45 Capricornus, both of sixth magnitude. They make a nice little line, and Neptune makes a sort of a triangle with them. So that's a nice thing to find, not far from Jupiter, and have a look perhaps around the middle of the month when the moon is new. And if I haven't said it before, one thing you can easily do, and should well do, is to download the program called Stellarium. Just put Stellarium into Google. It's a free program. It's a lovely planetarium program to show you what is where in the sky, and that will help you find Neptune. So, quite a lot to see this month. I think the Geminids are the real highlight, so I hope we get a clear night that night. So happy viewing up to Christmas. So as usual, I'll finish with some words for those people who live in the Southern Hemisphere. I thought this month, I just mention a few of the stars you can see, some of the brightest stars. And the brightest star, of course, you can see in the sky, which is basically due east, about 30 degrees above the horizon, is Sirius in the early evening. And that's at magnitude minus 1.46. And it's probably going to be twinkling. And because it's bright and low down, the atmosphere sometimes makes it look coloured. You get little flashes of greens and blues and reds. And sometimes people ring us up and say they've seen a UFO, but really it's actually Sirius. It's a Class A star. Now, the classes of stars, O, B, A, F, G. Now, the Sun is a Class G, so an A is on the hotter, brighter side. In fact, its temperature is about 9,500 Celsius, as opposed to our Sun, which is about 6,000. And it's actually 26 times more luminous. But one reason why it appears so bright is that it's actually pretty close, only about 8.6 light years away. Now, the second brightest star in the sky, one that we cannot see from here, is Canopus. And that's actually about 15 degrees higher up and further around to the south. That's a fairly rare type of star. It's at Class F, so O-B-A-F-G, so it's not that much hotter than our own Sun, but it's a supergiant star. It's a star towards the end of its life, and there aren't very many of these, so that actually makes it very bright. It's about 13,000 times as bright as our Sun, so that's one good reason why it appears pretty bright. In fact, it's actually quite a long way away. In comparison, whereas Sirius was 8.6 light years, Canopus is actually 309 light years away, and that indicates it must be fundamentally pretty bright, otherwise we wouldn't see it so well. And then another bright star is Achenar. It's the brightest star of Eridanus, and that's just above the south celestial pole. It's the ninth brightest star in the sky, and it's a Class B dwarf, so OBA. So that's a pretty hot star. In fact, we're not quite sure what the temperature is. Perhaps it's around 15,000 degrees Celsius. So getting on for three times the temperature of our own Sun. And that implies that the light from it is very, very blue. So just pick out those and think about them. Well, good hunting in the south as well.